Hello, and welcome to For the Record, a podcast series from RCVS Knowledge. For the Record features conversations between current and former members of the veterinary professions, highlighting voices and experiences historically underrepresented in our official archive. In this episode, in celebration of International Women's Day, we speak to our clinical leads, Pam Mosdell, Sally Everett, and Fiona Lovett, about their careers in the veterinary professions.
It's great today that in recognition of International Women's Day, I'm really excited to be talking to two of my other colleagues from RCVS Knowledge about women in the veterinary profession and our experiences. So, Sally, would you like to introduce yourself first of all?
Hi, I'm Sally Everett. I qualified from Bristol University in 1981 and spent most of my time in predominantly small animal practice. But later in my career, I've done a range of things, including getting a PhD, looking at clinical decision making in the veterinary profession, working as the head of scientific policy at BSAVA, and now doing some work providing clinical support to RCVS Knowledge on the library and information services.
Lovely. Fiona.
I'm Fiona Lovett. I graduated also from Bristol in 1995. I came up north to Teesdale, worked in mixed practice for just a couple of years and then went solely farm work. So I mainly worked with cattle and sheep, and then I specialised in sheep in 2012. And I've worked for myself since then doing second opinion stuff and I do a bit at the university as well.
And me, I'm Pam Mosdell. I qualified in 1979 from RVC, not from Bristol. And I worked in mixed practice in Yorkshire and in Cheshire for quite a few years. And then I moved into small animal practice. And then I moved back to mixed practice again briefly, but when I became a partner in a practice, but that practice then became a small animal practice. So my career has been predominantly small animal practice. I've also worked in New Zealand doing embryo transfer in Angora goats briefly. And I was lead assessor for RCVS Practice Standards Scheme for a while. And now I too help out at RCVS Knowledge with some of the quality improvement work. So what we're going to talk about, I think, is our experiences of being a woman in the veterinary profession, whether they be good, bad or indifferent, really. So, Sally, do you want to start the ball rolling?
Yes, well, I suppose my time in the veterinary profession has been quite sort of related along the sort of changes in terms of feminisation of the profession, because I went to Bristol in 1976, so just after the Sex Discrimination Act had come in. And at that time, Bristol and Cambridge were under threat of closure. So they were looking at increasing the numbers, and the Sex Discrimination Act meant that they couldn't discriminate against women, theoretically. And I was told by several of our lecturers that the women were there to make up the numbers, because that way the university could stay open, but we wouldn't take the jobs from the boys. Having said that, I've worked almost, apart from 2 years when my daughter was born, I've worked in the veterinary profession ever since. So I'm not sure that quite worked out as they were expecting.
Fiona.
Well, for me, so coming up to Northeast England, I was the second female vet within the practice doing farm work. So, and Rachel, who'd worked here before me, had made a good impression on the farmers. They used to arrive in farmyards and people go, You were never the vet, you were always the lady vet. But I think, yeah, they used to call me the posh one with the curly hair. It was more that I was a southerner than I was female, I think. But they couldn't understand my accent. They didn't think that anyone came from, there weren't any southern vet schools. All the previous vets up here had been from Edinburgh or Glasgow, and so they weren't totally convinced I'd done a bachelor degree, having come from the south. But I think as you go onto a farm, even if initially there'd be some scepticism, because you only have to do one job, you have to, the second visit is totally accepted. Once you've done one job, then it's like, oh, actually, she knows what she's doing. This is going to be fine. And I worked in the practice for over 20 years, and it was so many of my friends are still local farmers. Yeah, works really well.
Well, that's a coincidence, Fiona, because the practice that I worked in the mixed practice I worked in, I was actually the second woman vet there. But they obviously were a little bit more, it was a little bit further south in Yorkshire. They must have been a bit more advanced. But the first lady who'd worked there, she'd only been there for a very short time. So there were still a lot of farms that I went to where I was the first female vet they'd seen. And you're right, I got people going, oh, have you come for some hay for your pony, dear? at a few places. But I have to say, apart from, we had a couple of farmers who were awkward. And I remember going driving to one late at night to do a calving, and he'd always said, don't send any women vets. And I was like really, really stressed. But once I'd been there, luckily it was a relatively easy calving. Once I'd done that, that was fine. As you say, you were accepted as part of the community. But the funny thing for me for that practice, and it was a lovely practice, I have to say, a really lovely practice. And after 4 years, I decided to move on. And I told the partners that, and there was a farm vet partner, the main person who ran the farm side of the practice, who was lovely. And he said to me, oh, no, we're really sad that you're leaving. If you'd been a man, we'd have offered you a partnership. And actually, after the shock wore off, I decided to take it as a compliment, because, you know, the fact that they actually thought that, because it was so far away from their way of thinking at that time, the whole of society at that time, and this was in 1983, the whole society was much more of a male-dominated society, wasn't it, Sally?
Absolutely. And I think the fact that everybody, clients and everything, had to change, and it wasn't just farmers, even within small animal practice, and I would say possibly more the female clients than the male clients, were resistant to seeing a female vet. And for years, I mean, well into my 30s, if we had a male student in practice, they would almost always talk to the student rather than me. Just because they walk into the room and they see a man and a woman, and they just make the assumption that he's the vet and you're the assistant. So that went on for, once you get grey hair, you can get past that one. But in the early stages, that was...
No, you're absolutely right. And after I left there and did a few other things, and then decided a few years later that I wanted to get a partnership in practice, and I started to apply for some roles that involve partnerships. And I can remember one of them where they said to me, oh, OK, so you just want to be a salaried partner, wouldn't you? And I went, no, yeah. I thought this was actually a full partnership. No, it's just a salaried partnership. Well, I didn't get the job, and a really good friend of mine got that job, and I knew afterwards it was a full partnership. They just were never going to give that to a woman. And then I did become a partner in a practice, and that was fine. But it was harder, I think, unless for some women who were maybe married to other to male vets, then they would become partners, equal partners in the practice. But it was harder. There weren't so many women who'd become partners by themselves, really.
I think that goes back to some of the other expectations and differences in society at that time, and we're mentioning about how there was an expectation you would have a spouse that would be there to answer the phone, because we didn't have mobile phones initially. I mean, I can remember my 1987-88, I was in a practice and we got our first mobile phone, which was literally the size of a car battery, which you could carry around. But it did mean you could go out while you were on call, or you could leave the house and take it with you to the surgery. But, you know, when we graduated, there were certainly practices, and they expected, you know, somebody to answer the phone when you took your job. So that tended to, there was an assumption that there might be a man with a wife who would do it, because even if you had a husband, they didn't think he would stay at home and answer the phone for you.
In job adverts, it was always for a married vet, because a married man would have a wife, and obviously that would be her role to answer the phone.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And as for those questions, sometimes at interviews that might not be totally they'd be sort of slightly hidden, the questions, but they were really asking you if you're intending to have children.
Yeah, they weren't hidden in my case. I can remember them being really quite explicit.
And actually, to be fair, I did use that to my advantage at one stage when I was in practice. I'd worked there for a long time, and I wanted to go on an expedition to the Antarctic for a 3-month, And I approached the partners and said, you know what, I could be asking for maternity leave and I only want 3 months. And it took them by surprise and they let me go. So I kind of think, you know, there's nothing wrong with using it to your advantage. Later no. I did, and later I had three maternity leaves off from the practice for my three children. So I suppose it was, it worked out.
As a partner in the practice, when I had my son, I basically had, because I had a cesarean, I had to have 6 weeks off. But after that, I was back part time and I still had to do my night duties. I still had to do my fair share of the night duties.
And I think those are things that have changed a lot in terms of flexible working, out of hours, all of those things, because they weren't negotiable, really. Well, that's not entirely true. There was some room for negotiation. And I did very well when my daughter was very little in terms of working part time and those sorts of things. But you had to be the flexible one to a large extent. There weren't the same sorts of expectations that there would be part time jobs and no out of hours and those sorts of things. And there was
There was really poor, my first pregnancy, there was no information on risk assessments for farm vet. In fact, I wrote an in-practice article alongside someone from the HSE because I couldn't find any information and I wasn't necessarily getting good guidance from there was certain what is risky and what isn't. They wouldn't let me do certain jobs because I was pregnant, so I couldn't. And it meant I was always the vet at the practice who had to go and do the emergency carvings or really, really risky things. And that wasn't, that was in the early 2000s. It wasn't, that's not a long time ago.
No. 10 years before that, I think the idea of risk assessments in practices was not very great at all. All our anaesthesia on small animal side was halothane and scavenging was nothing like it is now, if it was there at all. Yeah, health and safety was a very different attitude, really. I mean, it was not that there wasn't any and no one was trying to be difficult. It was just not seen in the same way.
That's the different importance.
I think a positive, though, has been that now there is a lot more part-time working generally, and I think that's been a really good thing. And it's been a really good thing for practices. When I was still had the practice, it used to be great to have the flexibility of having quite a few part-time employees.
Yeah, and I think one of the important things here, I just checked the RCVS survey of the professions, but it's more women, but it's not only women that take up part-time roles. I think in the last one was 2019, there were still 13% of men took up part-time roles. So it can be good for everybody, it's not just a women's thing. People can have all sorts of reasons why they might want to work part-time.
That's so much better that's available now, I think. I think that's been a real positive. I mean, I suppose the other thing is we still need a little bit more diversity in the profession, I think, don't we?
Yeah, I suppose diversity is a difficult one in that we've swapped from being a predominantly male profession to a predominantly female profession. And there can be arguments that males are the minority, although when you look at lots of the other criteria, they're still doing remarkably well within it. They're not struggling. They can usually, they're the ones who are in the leadership roles who
the business take, apart,
those sorts of parts. But I suppose the big issue perhaps now for the profession is, certainly from the veterinary side, is how expensive it is to train.
Yeah.
And the debt that students, graduates are coming out with and how that may be impacting the diversity of people entering the profession.
We were very lucky, weren't we, Sally, that we had we didn't have to pay any fees and we had grants.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't very much and nobody expected to be earning very much money, but you weren't coming out with debt.
No, even for me, I had a maintenance grant to go to university. And so and that was in the 90s. But it's a very different picture now, isn't it, that you not only have your high living costs, but you have to pay large fees as well. So for people to come out with large loans is a barrier to inclusion, I think, impression.
And I think although we were a minority in the veterinary profession, I'm not saying we were the pioneers, there were generations before us that were the pioneers, there were still changes going on. Society wasn't quite so accepting of women in professional roles and things like that. But I do wonder, although there have been lots of advances, mobile phones, sedation of animals, all sorts of things like that, and lots of advances in terms of part-time working, health and safety, actually, I think personally, we had quite a good time in the veterinary profession. And I do wonder if it's a bit harder for everybody to be a vet today than we had. I mean, sometimes we were making it up as we went along a little bit. The whole profession was. We were all learning as we went along. But I don't feel that it was a negative or a particularly difficult time to be a vet. I think we had quite a good time being vets.
I agree. Mm. I think there wasn't the internet for a start off.
No.
People, I think, generally respected vets more probably than they do now and accepted. I mean, you obviously always get people who are going to be awkward, but most people, the majority, accepted your view and your opinion. If you could explain and keep them in the picture of what was happening, they would be pretty happy.
Expectations were very different. They wanted you to do your best, and they were most of the time.
Do you think that's a society thing, that people are more respectful of others generally, and you know, of their vet as an upstanding member of the community that maybe has been lost? I don't know.
I don't know, but I think they might be onto something there, because I don't think that the changes we're seeing at the moment are just in the veterinary profession. If you look at the medical profession, profession, I get the feeling that they're going through very similar changes and stresses. And I think it is a difference. I mean, there are good things about shifting from a very paternalistic view of the professions to a shared decision-making type model, but there are some downsides to that that perhaps we haven't worked through fully yet. And provide some challenges for the future.
No, I agree. I think it is harder now. I think it's more stressful, but I also think it's busier. Practices I've worked in, we always used to have a coffee break. We'd always stop. Everybody would stop.
There were times of the year when you knew that everyone was out harvesting or doing. So, I mean, practices were all mixed initially anyway. So there were different things going on. There wasn't quite the specialisation. But I agree. I think I didn't feel so. There were days when it felt pressurised, but it wasn't relentless pressure in the way that I think some people are experiencing now.
And if you did genuine mixed practice, you could always get out in your car and drive out to do some calls, which was always a bit of a relief. But then, of course, the farm vets, is it more pressured in farm veterinary practice now, Fiona, do you think?
I think everyone is busy and under more pressure. There is always a lull in the summer when people are out cutting grass, but there's the paperwork thing, and that's the same in all professions, isn't it? But, you know, our teachers, our doctors, everyone is facing more of a paperwork issue than we did. Maybe we winged it a bit more.
And yet I seem to remember when computers were brought in, we were all sold the idea that this would get rid of all the paperwork, and all it seems to have done is created a lot more.
It did mean you could read the illegible writing of your colleagues. So suddenly when we got the computers, that was the main difference. I do remember my very first practice, we didn't really even have proper records particularly. We had a few little cards which, if you were lucky, might have a vague description of something that had happened, but we certainly didn't have full clinical records.
And I bet you didn't have a job contract, did you, Pam, when you first...
Oh no, definitely not.
You've got a letter saying they were offering you a job and how much it would pay you, nothing more than that.
And actually, that's quite scary that even up till quite fairly recently, I think BVA did a survey certainly maybe not more than 10 years ago, when still loads of people didn't have contracts. So I think that's, you know, something that's probably changed for the better. There's a lot more protection for employees, isn't there, whether it be health and safety or other things like that.
Working time directives, they didn't exist when we graduated. So.
No, that caused a lot of issues, didn't it? The other thing that didn't exist on the small animal side was out of hours providers. So everybody, every practice had to do their own out of hours. So yeah, you had to do out of hours. It was normal to do out of hours. And I think there's been positives and negatives of that. I think it's great that people don't have to do out of hours, but I think a lot of the interesting cases came in as out of hours cases.
And I think it helped you, it did build your confidence because you had to do it. I mean, there was usually a senior partner who you could ring, although you probably didn't want to ring them unless it really was an emergency, because you might get, not growled at, but at least asked why you were ringing them. But you did discover how much you could do on your own.
Yeah. There were a lot of jobs that used to be night on, night off, and every other weekend working, weren't there? That was pretty standard.
Yes, I mean, going down to one in four was considered a really phenomenally good rota.
Yes.
Everyone aspired to.
but that has made a huge change, and obviously that change, and even now in equine practices, even out of hours providers and may even be coming in farm practice, I think, Fiona. So yeah,
it's always harder with farm practice because of the distance, and so it's just hard to be doing a cesarean in one place and have to drive, you know, an hour or two or more is just not feasible. I think, I think probably people end up doing out of hours for longer in farm practice.
And my impression, and I haven't done farm work for a long time, is that the majority of farm animal emergency calls are emergencies that need to be seen. And that's no longer the case, I would say, in small animal practice. There is a move towards quite a lot of people wanting all sorts of things seen at outside normal hours.
Yeah, we're a 24/7 society, aren't we, for so many things that people don't see any issue with, you know, wanting their dog's nails clipped at 2 o'clock in the morning. Or I remember once having someone ring wanting their budgie's nails clipped at 2 o'clock in the morning, because our practice was a veterinary hospital. They were like, but you're a hospital, you must be open.
My best was being woken up about 6 in the morning with a phone, and it was a farmer to say, if I dip my sheep now, will they be dry tonight? Which you really don't want a question like that at 5:30 in the morning.
No, probably depends on the weather rather a lot.
It is, as you said before, Sally, it's not just the veterinary world that's moved on, the whole world has moved on, and people are probably a lot, well, I think definitely more sort of litigious, is that the word now, more likely to complain or to want something put right or want financial recompense.
Yes, I think this is, the expectations are very different. But I also wonder, talking about where perhaps not as close to our clients, with a lot more, this is a downside of part-time working and out of hours, you're not necessarily getting the case continuity, always seeing the same vet, building the relationships in the way that you do. And I'm not saying that that means that it's better outcomes for the animal, but I think it helps with the communication with the client, and that can avert a proportion of the problems that arise. But at the expense of vets having to be on call, as you say, every other night or something like that, so that they're the one who's there to see it. So, swings and roundabouts.
It's that relationship that's what's always kept me in farm practice, is because that you, the length of time, the fact it's someone's business and you're part of that business is what I've always really enjoyed working with cattle and sheep farmers, definitely. Yeah.
Well, I've done a very closer relationship, don't you?
Most of my small animal practice has been in market towns, and I think even with the small animal clients, you can build those sorts of relationships and you're seen as the vet, and you do have that. And I do think that we lose those relationships at our peril a little bit.
It's the human side, isn't it? But I must admit, I can never remember being terrified that I might get a complaint or be struck off. It never even occurred to me, I don't think, for the first probably at least, well, maybe not 20 years, but at least the first 15 years of my career, it never occurred to me that something like that could happen.
I think the other thing we had was senior partners who may have driven us mad and not necessarily done very much, but there was somebody there who was quietly overseeing things and potentially fending things off before they reached you, because they had the relationship with the client. And I do think that now there are many people working, there may be a senior vet in the practice, but they might not be in that surgery with them at that time. And I think that can be a downside as well. And that's not just for women, but for all vets. I think that can be, make things a little bit more difficult, where things can escalate more quickly than perhaps they did in our day.
Someone with experience and common sense in the background saying, no, yeah, I wouldn't do that. Or why don't you just give them a ring and explain that to them now? And all those kind of things, you know, no, don't take the lump off if you haven't got permission. All those kind of things that just keep people on the straight and narrow. And I think you're absolutely right, Sally, because remembering the same farm vet who I said earlier had said to me about a partnership. When I first started the practice, as I say, I hadn't been, there'd only been one female vet briefly before me. He, when I went to on farms, they all knew who I was because he'd gone round there and said, we've got this new lady vet and she's lovely and she'll be coming to see you soon. And that made such a huge difference.
Yeah.
So things move on. But I think, yeah, we're definitely more of a female dominated profession now, aren't we?
Yeah. I'd say the profession's been very good to me in my career. I don't feel that being a woman in the veterinary profession has been a negative. I mean, there have been some challenges along the way, but I don't think they've been greater than they would have been doing any other sort of jobs. And I feel it's been a very good profession.
Yes, I'd concur with that, definitely.
I agree. I think the problems or any issues we might have had were the societal issues of that time, not particularly because we were vets. And I have to say, yeah, I think it's been very good to me. And if I had my time again, I would do it again.
Yep. Likewise.
Well, thank you so much for chatting. I think that's been, it's given, we've enjoyed it anyway, haven't we?
It's given us a chance
to air these things. So lovely to talk to you. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you for listening to For the Record. Join us next time for more insights from underrepresented voices within the veterinary professions. If you would like to get involved in future episodes, please contact the RCVS Knowledge Archives team by email at archives@rcvsknowledge.org.